Welcome to the Monday, April 9th, SR2 committee. We'll open a subcommittee and open a public hearing on House Bill 3124. And we have Vic Peterson with the Department of Environmental Quality.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3124 is back before us. This bill was Representative Devlin, at the request of Representative Devlin. It's establishing the program to examine health risks from contaminated fish in the waters of the state. We've invited the Department of Environmental Quality to come and speak to us in regards of any studies or information that they have regarding such contaminants in the water.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dick Peterson, and I'm manager of the Watershed Management Section for the Department of Environmental Quality. As was pointed out, I'm here not to testify directly to the bill, but answer or talk a little bit about studies in the Willamette River and statewide that lead to fish health advisories and what DEQ has been done over the course of the years, and a little bit about some more recent studies, and then what's next. So very briefly, I'm going to go over those issues. We have about 14 fish consumption advisories in the state of Oregon, and that is statewide. And what we mean by fish consumption advisories is if you have levels of certain things in fish tissue that people are catching and eating, we advise them that there may be some risks associated with eating those fish. To back way up, in the late 70s is when DEQ really started collecting fish tissue samples and started learning a little bit more about certain things that might be in fish tissues. And so that's been going on for some years, and that became part of our routine monitoring program, or a small part of our routine monitoring program. Later on, and in the 90s, is when we really started focusing some efforts with some other agencies, Oregon State University, for example, and USGS, and learning a little bit more about fish tissue levels of certain chemicals, and with the Willamette being a little bit of a focus, and learning more about that. And that's really when we started learning, too, that statewide there are some issues with mercury in fish tissues that would cause us to issue some of these warnings that we had talked about. And I'll talk a little bit about what leads up to a warning in just a minute. Then in the mid-90s, too, along with that, is when we started learning about skeletal deformities in the Willamette River. And skeletal deformities meaning that the skeletal bones of certain fish being deformed, like their spine being not right, or their rib bones being deformed, that sort of thing. So there's we started learning about skeletal deformities. And I'll just mention that a little bit later, very briefly. And that's primarily in what we call the Newburgh Pool area, which is from the town of Newburgh, pretty much downstream in the Willamette River. Then in 1997, DEQ received some funds from the legislature to look really a lot closer at certain things affecting fish in the Willamette River. And it was those particular studies have been pretty much completed, and there are several components of them, but just two parts of them that I just wanted to briefly mention to you today. One is on skeletal deformities that I talked about earlier, where we are seeing the occurrence of skeletal deformities in that area of that I talked about, which is Newburgh Pool. And what we learned in the later studies that were funded in 1997, that the incidence of, or the frequency of skeletal deformities was less frequent than we had seen earlier, but they were still occurring. The thing that we do not know is the cause of skeletal deformities, which will take some additional work later on by a number of different people. We don't know if they're caused by levels of chemicals or other things or other factors, including like parasites or things like that might be affecting fish. The second study that I wanted to talk about that was completed, that I just handed out a fact sheet on, was more to the topic of this bill, which is fish consumption, where we looked at, using a contractor, looked at the element of risk involved to people that might be eating certain resident fish in the Willamette River. in that same area from, say, Newburgh, or a little bit upstream from Newburgh downstream. And so what we did was we collected fish, certain resident fish, like I said, like bass and suckers and things like that that reside in the Willamette year-round, and measured not only the level of certain chemicals in fish, but looked at what is the risk to people that might be eating those. And what we found is that there is risk for certain groups of people out there that are eating fish, primarily people that are eating fish for sustenance. A lot of people are out there fishing, you know, daily for fish in their diet. A lot of ethnic populations that do collect a lot of fish on a daily basis, eat the whole fish, and they might be bottom fish like suckers or bass. And so what we found was that for certain chemicals, mercury, polychlorinated biphenyls or PCBs, which are used for coolants and transformers that have been banned for a number of years, and some pesticides that have been banned for a number of years are showing up in these fish tissues, and that some of those ethnic populations, those people that fish and eat those fish on a daily basis are their risk to getting cancer or having other health effects associated with eating those fish are higher than what would be considered normal. And so that was one of the outcomes of one of those studies. So, and what we did as a result of that is work with Oregon Health Division to advise people that might be fishing out there and warning them that if they do eat these fish, there may be some risk, some health issue risk related to those. So for DEQ, what's our next steps in this process? I think I've talked to this community before a little bit about total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs. And for the Willamette and other areas around the state, we'll be completing TMDLs for mercury because of fish tissue levels. And for the Willamette in particular, we'll be looking at what things we might be able to do if, in fact, we can control some of the way that the mercury is getting into some of these fish. And I might add, for mercury, there's a lot of natural mercury in the environment. There's been a lot of historic mining, you know, to mine natural ores that exist in this area. So there is a natural source of mercury in the Willamette and other parts of the state. So certainly we'll be doing that. And then also we will be working with others to look at what is the cause of these levels of in tissues of fish, and, you know, what's really leading to that. Where's that material coming from? Is it from sediments, or is it from runoff from land, or is it from point sources? And really try to look at the sources of some of this, so we might be able to make some decisions, management decisions in the future, to help with those reductions. So that's one part. Another key part.
At present time, we would be unable to tell whether this mercury contamination was from natural sources or whether it's from point source pollution or other pollution. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, you are correct. We do not know that there is sources, natural sources of mercury, and we do know that there's mercury in sediment that has probably come from those natural sources in the process of mining. We do know that there's mercury that comes out of point source discharges at some level. So we do know that there's sources. We don't know their relative contribution and how that might lead to that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And the final thing I was going to say, just in terms of very related to this this bill, is what we do is we take warning people that might be eating fish that have elevated levels very serious, and that's where we work with the Oregon Health Division. Once we learn that there's certain levels, we talk to them and look at the risks and work with them on warning and advising people. And we also work with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and a lot of these warnings, or all these warnings, are in the fishing regulations, so that people that are fishing and catching these fish are warned and advised on not only that there's levels there, but how they should treat these fish once they catch them to reduce their exposure. So that's a real quick snapshot of what we've been doing, DEQ, in this arena, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Questions, Mr. Peterson? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I just want to clear up, this is just a middle Willamette from Oregon City south to Wheatland Ferry, right? And so you haven't done a study of the area north of that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Palme, the area of the study, we did collect fish north of Newburgh and north of Salem and found that the levels were much lower.
I'm sorry, north of Oregon City.
North of Oregon City. There were samples collected downstream of Oregon City also in that area down to the mouth of where it flows into the Columbia.
But your study and your fact sheet is only referring to the middle part of the Willamette, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, that's correct. Although we did collect some samples downstream, not as many. So I'd say the levels downstream are thought to be fairly similar to what we found in that area.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. Appreciate your testimony and information you provided us here. Very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we have Matt Blevins from OEC.
Mr. Jensen, members of the committee, thanks for letting me come and testify today. For the record, my name is Matt Blevins. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. Founded in 1968, the Oregon Environmental Council is a nonpartisan organization with nearly 2,000 members throughout the state. OEC's mission is to restore and protect Oregon's clean water and air now and for future generations. OEC brings Oregonians together to create and promote socially just and economically sound environmental policies. OEC supports House Bill 3124, which would require the Oregon Health Division to perform risk assessment on the dangers of fish consumption and effectively communicate those risks. There is a known health threat addressed by HB 3124. In Oregon, there are 11 advisories against consuming contaminated fish, including the Snake River, East Lake, the Dorena Reservoir, and the entire main stem of the Willamette River. 9 of these are due to mercury contamination. Mercury can impair fetal development, preventing the brain and nervous system from developing normally. Children poisoned by mercury show lowered intelligence, impaired hearing, and poor coordination. Their verbal and motor skills may be delayed. A recent report by the National Academy of Sciences estimated that 60,000 babies born each year in the U.S. face a serious threat of learning disabilities or other neurological problems because their mothers ate fish contaminated with mercury during their pregnancies. HB 3124 would provide for needed information and outreach. Fish contamination is widespread, but the OHD does not have sufficient resources to effectively establish a system to assess the public health risk resulting from fish consumption and water contamination in Oregon. The Oregon Health Division acknowledges the need for exposure prevention education. This is of particular importance for low-income communities and communities of color who are more likely to eat fish for subsistence. This is especially true for Native American communities whose fish consumption rates are often significantly higher than the amount used to calculate health standards. HB 3124 would provide the Oregon Health Division with necessary resources to establish a program to gather better data, evaluate the risk, and educate the public on the health risks associated with consumption of contaminated fish, particularly those communities most at risk. Spend now on HB 3124 so we don't have to spend later. Under current budget constraints, we agree that we must be smart about how we spend limited dollars. In this case, a limited investment can save lives and long-term health care costs. This is an item that we identified in our conservation budget as a priority for natural resource spending and believe that the health of Oregon's children require this expenditure. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Blevins. Any questions? Thank you kindly. Mm-hmm. At this point, we close the public hearing on House Bill 3124, and we will open a work session on HJM 5.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 5 is urging Congress to fund the cleanup of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation and expedite other Columbia River cleanup efforts. Attached, you will find a Dash 1 amendment. Dash 1 amendment simply adds the Secretary of Interior to the delegation receiving a copy of this memorial upon adoption.
Okay. We would entertain a motion to move the amendment to the main motion.
So moved.
Representative Tomei moves the Dash 1 amendment to HJM 5. Is there any discussion? there any objection? So ordered. Entertain a motion to move HDM 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Representative Tomei moves HDM 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Myers?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
And Chair Benson?
Aye. And Representative Leonard, we are voting on HJM 5.
Thank you, Speaker. I'll vote aye.
All right. HDM 5, having received the votes, will pass. And Representative King has volunteered to carry HDM 5. Hearing. We'll close the hearing on HDM 5, and at this point, open a public hearing on House Bill 2540.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2540 is extending the sunset on the prohibition on the State Fish and Wildlife Commission from initiating certain actions relating to existing hydroelectric projects, declaring an emergency effective June 30th, 2001. However, the Dash 2 amendment is replacing the original bill, and we have several panels here to speak to the report. It's the Fish Passage Task Force report. And we have the department here to begin giving their presentation.
Good afternoon, Roy.
Good afternoon, Chair Jensen. Members of the committee. For the record, Roy Elker, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Legislative Coordinator, and on my right, Mr. Charlie Corarino. He's our Fish Passage Program Leader in the department in the Fish Screening and Passage Program. Chair Jensen, these Dash 2 amendments hopefully represent the end of a four-year process and two task forces of very hardworking individuals on behalf of their various interests and stakeholder groups regarding fish passage in the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I refer your attention, sir, to the a report that each of the members has that's been filed on behalf of the task force, and I'll also go a little bit to my prepared comments. Briefly, Mr. Chair, the last two legislative assemblies have directed the department to convene a fish passage task force to, quote, develop recommendations, include suggested legislative changes necessary to improve the benefits to fish resulting from fish passage, fishway, and alternative mitigation requirements. The original task force process, sir, was the result of an opinion in 1996, and that's talked about in the full report, that for years and years the department had been working with stakeholder groups, water groups, involving fish passage and mitigation for fish passage. But in 96 we received a formal opinion of the AG's office that advised the department that because of the way the laws were written regarding fish passage, and in particular because they were older laws dating from, actually there's a section about fish passage dates back to the territorial constitution, I think it's 1843, regarding fish passage. But because the way the Game Commission and the Fish Commissions were combined in the early 70s, since then no substantive work had ever been done looking at the fish passage statutes that each commission was responsible for enforcing. So in 96, we got a letter advising us that we had a problem regarding fish passage and the state of Oregon's, how it worked with people looking either to have fish passage or not. And the bottom line was, we were told, the department was told, they no longer had the power to do something besides fish passage. In other words, sir, we could not mitigate. If a person came to us and said we need to develop a water project, we'd work with them on fish passage alternatives. Usually one of the alternatives is some form of mitigation, because fish passage can be very expensive. And at times, it doesn't work, frankly, like Hell's Canyon Dam, for example. So we were told that we no longer could work on alternatives regarding a non-passage type of mitigation. And that's when the following year, that next session, the legislature, they told the department, they passed a temporary law that would sunset in 2 years, giving the department power to mitigate for fish passage, but also told us to develop this task force process and look at solutions to solve the problem. We came very close last session developing a task force solution, but in the end it didn't quite have enough of the details worked out. We got a two-year kind of another two-year time, I guess, to convene a second task force, which we did, and after some very hard work by many, many people, we've come together on this Dash 2 amendment for you today. Just in finishing my prepared remarks, you'll see from the attachment here the number of people and the type of people that were involved. If you look at page 3 at your attachment, and we have a number of task force members, 5 or 6, to testify today behind us, and that includes, of course, Representative Lee, who now vice chair of the committee. This, again, over a series of probably 10 or 12 months of hard work, we've come together and some agreements on the 2540-2 amendment. Oregon certainly has a lot of room for improvement on fish passage. A recent survey of over 5,500 culverts on state and county roads showed that nearly one half of the culverts have impediments to fish passage. There's also numerous other culverts on private and federal roads that block passage. In addition to prom culverts, ODF&W, along with Water Resources, has identified over 700 artificial obstructions, about which are partial or full impediments to fish passage. The department believes that the proposed legislation, that's House Bill 2540-2 amendments, provides a meaningful tool to provide fish passage to hundreds of miles of fish habitats throughout Oregon, and is very consistent with the Oregon plan. The proposed process encourages cooperation, collaboration between public and private entities, provides significant cost-sharing mechanism, establishes a public advisory group, and has uniformly broad support from the various stakeholder and interest groups. If I could bring your attention on page 1 of the attachment, which is essentially the executive summary, it really lays out in those small boxes there for about a full page exactly what the full report talks about and exactly what this new legislation proposes to do. And particularly, it integrates and makes consistent provisions of two former fish passage statutes, requires installation of fish passage alternatives at the owner's or operator's expense at all artificial obstructions at the time of construction, abandonment, or other fundamental change in permit status, requires installation of fish passage alternatives at the owner or operator's expense at any existing artificial obstruction when the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission determines that emergency exists because of adverse impacts to a fish population calling for immediate action. And then if you go through the rest of the list on page 2, it pretty much sums up the sum of this legislative material. And the department appreciates the opportunity in front of the committee to make these comments. I know there's several panels wishing to discuss this, and also would defer to Representative Lee at this point, since she was a member of both task forces. Comments, perhaps.
Thank you. If you want me to say something at some point, just let me know, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the thing I'm going to want to know for the committee is how the Dash 2, where the Dash 2 deviates from the original bill.
Chair Jensen, my understanding is that the original bill was merely a placeholder bill to allow some further time to finish up the task force process.
So am I correct then that you're saying that the dash two is a complete replacement of the original bill?
Yes, Chair Jensen, that's correct.
Okay. Did you have something, Representative Lee? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, thank you. I was just going to make that comment that it was a complete, what one might call a debt and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Questions for Roy? I guess you're up. Easy day. We have Dave Anderson, Ron Schaub, and Jim Myron. I think all coming together. just a minute, gentlemen. The chair is going to close the public hearing on this bill, on House Bill 2540, and I'm going to reopen the work session, or reopen, I'm going to ask for a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representatives Leonard, Cruz, and Smith to vote on HJM 5.
So moved.
Is there any objection? Hearing no objections, HDM 5 is the Hanford Waste mark.
Leonard votes aye.
Cruz aye.
Smith aye.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
I will close that and open the public hearing back up on House Bill 2540. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Jensen, members of the committee. My name is Dave Anderson. I'm representing the Oregon Water Utilities Council. My address for the record is 6780 Reservoir Road, The Dalles, Oregon. The Oregon Water Utilities Council supports HB 2540-2. The Oregon Water Utilities Council is a committee of the Pacific Northwest section of the American Water Works Association, and our membership is made up of municipal and other public water utilities in the state of Oregon. The Oregon Water Utility Council believes that this bill provides a practical and reasonable approach to addressing fish passage issues in the state. I'd like to briefly touch on six aspects of the bill, which are very important to the water utility support. The first is that it provides a mechanism under which fish passage, accommodation, and restoration will be focused where it will truly benefit fish and encourages cooperative partnerships between the state and project owners. Secondly, the bill ties the requirements for owner-funded fish passage to decision points for the project owner, such as times of original construction, major enhancements, or abandonment. So without providing a disincentive for public safety projects, such as seismic upgrades and spillway enhancements. Third, the bill allows the Fish and Wildlife Commission to waive the requirements for fish passage if the owner proposes alternative mitigation that benefits fish more than passage would. It also allows the commission to grant exemptions to the requirements for fish passage when appropriate. Fourth, the bill provides cost sharing to install fish passage on existing legally constructed structures for which the owner is not facing any of the new decision point triggers, but for which ODFNW has identified as a priority to reestablish fish passage. Fifth, the bill provides that the Fish and Wildlife Commission can order the installation of fish passage by declaring an emergency. Very important that these must be fish passage emergencies caused by the facility and that the declaration of emergencies not become a substitute for the cost-sharing opportunities. Sixth, the bill encourages the state to coordinate its review and requirements on a project which are also undergoing consultation with federal agencies under the Endangered Species Act. Oregon Water Utility Council appreciates the opportunity to participate on this fish passage task force. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from Mr. Anderson? Here.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here today to provide a very brief statement. My name is Rob Schaub. I'm general manager of the Coos Bay North End Water Board in Coos Bay, Oregon. Our address is 2305 Ocean Boulevard, Coos Bay. The Water Board actually went through the process of applying for and securing a fish passage waiver under 2102. I've been a member of this task force under 2102 and also 2607, and here to add my support for House Bill 2540. On 2 points. Number one, I believe that this continues to demonstrate Oregon's support for recovery of salmon and other anadromous species. And number two, it recognizes the equity issues that water supply developers have in relationship to developing supplies legally and in good faith with direction from the state. With that, I close and ask if you have any questions. I'd be glad to answer.
Questions for Mr. Schaub?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Jim Meyer, representing Oregon Trout. I was also a member of this four-year-long effort, and we are supportive of this legislation. It's not perfect. It does represent 4 years and countless hours of a lot of effort on a lot of people's part. We think that it will probably continue to evolve over the next few years as the bugs get worked out. And yeah, I guess one of the problems that we see that will have to be overcome from the outset is the fact that there's no money in this program. The bill does require at least a 60% cost share by the state of Oregon for fish passage facilities, but there's no state money here. If we're hoping to rely on federal money, it sounds like that might be a pretty slim pickings as well. And I guess Mr. Anderson mentioned the emergency provision in the bill. It was my understanding in our deliberations that if there is no money in the pot, the Department, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, if they needed to, could declare an emergency just on that basis and go through the emergency provision. So maybe I'm not clear on what we had discussed as the final resolution there. But anyway, you know, hopefully there'll be some federal funding to implement this program. It's got to be better than the status quo. If we do nothing, I don't think that's a viable alternative. We would go back to the old statute as of July 1, where all owner-operators of existing passage barriers are required to install at their own expense fish passage devices, and that, you know, would require the Department of Fish and Wildlife to enforce that statute, which they've been unwilling or unable to over the years. So I don't think going back to the status quo is the answer. This has got to be our solution, and it will get better over time. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cruz.
Jim, do you see this as, do you see $66 as a possible source for this or not?
Representative Cruz, somebody certainly could put in an application to OWEB for the use of those funds. You know, it would sort out in their priorities, I guess.
But it does fit under the definition.
Well, if fish screens can be paid for out of OWEB funds, I don't see any reason why fish passage couldn't be.
Just thought I'd throw that out there.
It wasn't the intent of the drafters of Measure 66, but that is the way things work.
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
Jim, I'm not sure if you can answer this, and I don't think I see anybody here as a representative of the tribes, but I understand that no representatives of the tribes participated in this group, even though they were invited. Do you have any sense why that was?
Now, that's a good question, Representative Tomei. I can't answer it. I know that the tribes are asked to participate in a lot of things, and they've got limited resources just like the rest of us, but I don't know. It just seems to me that if this was a high enough priority, they could have figured out a way to send somebody, but that did not happen.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. At this point, we'd call Billy Tiffany from the League of Oregon Cities and Pete Test with the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm William Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities and also a member of the last iteration of the Fish Passage Task Force. I as well have a long history with this. This issue goes back, as been described, to 1997 and really constitutes a pretty extensive effort on behalf of owners, on behalf of the conservation community, on behalf of state agencies and other folks. I think Mr. Myron's testimony was pretty accurate. What this bill attempts to do is move us forward. Extremely important for all entities in the state to move forward on this fish passage issue. And I think this compromise, which you have before you in the form of the Dash 2 amendments, really is a fair and equitable way to do that. It requires some accountability on the owner's side, as well as some assurance and decision points on the owner's side as well, which is very necessary in terms of making these large investments for fish passage or mitigation and release passage. And the second point that I think Mr. Myron and the other panelists have made is this really allows for real action on the ground, and that's really what we're seeking here, is kind of an end to this sort of standoff issue on fish passage, and let's get past that and move to where we can have some actual improvements in passage on the ground and have some cooperation. I think this bill allows folks to do that. In terms of the project owner perspective, there's probably three key aspects that this the amendments to this bill have. One is mitigation, as you heard, mitigation in lieu of passage. Many instances, particularly for water providers, passage is just not an option. You're trying to store water for beneficial uses, and you can provide, in some cases, a greater benefit for fish in lieu of passage. And so that's, as Mr. Ellicker indicated, that was not even an option, and still today is not an option under the Oregon statutes, except for the waiver provision, which runs out in July. The second point for project owner perspective is clear decision points, particularly for folks who have to make infrastructure decisions. They can do that and do that equitably as long as they know at what point in the process they need to roll those costs in together. And when they're putting their capital infrastructure in place, they can go ahead and plan for those. So the provisions that allow for project owner expense when a permit is due or when decommissioning happens or when you're planning your major reconstruction, those are all important provisions. And then lastly, the cost share, of course, is important for project owners. And I would, again, reiterate, it is a share. It's 60-40, and the state can require an emergency at full owner expense if that's necessary. So on behalf of League of Oregon Cities and I think project owners in general, we appreciate the work of the task force and very adamantly support this legislation and hope the committee would allow this to move forward. Thank you.
Representative.
I'm sorry. Is there questions for Mr. Tiffany?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My recollection, Willie, of the issue about emergency basis was that emergency is not just created because there's no funding, but if an emergency is called, then the project developer would finance the efforts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lee, that's my recollection as well. The task force spent a fair amount of time, I'd say a large amount of time, on this issue trying to determine when an emergency would exist. And my recollection of those discussions, I think you'd see in the report, indicate that what we were talking about was when the passage itself caused a biological emergency to the fish population, not external factors such as funding. It's really based, the emergency provisions are based on the actual biology of what's happening on the ground and happening with the fish populations.
Sorry. Other questions? Mr. Test, I'm sorry to have interrupted you.
That's probably all right. I'll be short. Chair Jensen, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pete Test, Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation.
And I'm a rather come lately on the Fish Passage Task Force. I was involved the last 2 years of the process, although I did follow the bill last session, or at least the efforts from last session that never became quite a bill to the point that it is today. But I have been very active in the fish screening program, which in many cases runs up against passage problems within the screening process. I was recommended to put on the committee to be another representative of small irrigators and small landowners, and their situation was not any different than anyone else's, but in many cases there are blockages in small streams in parts of the country that never ever thought there would be a problem with. They're basically perfectly legal diversions and such, but passage was not an issue on some of those areas. But with the advent of the Endangered Species Act, and as we've learned more about the biology, these people are going to be in a situation where they're going to have to do as fish screening did, provide some passage where there are problems. The group and the task force worked very hard, realizing there may be a number of these folks and a situation where many of them had approval 50 years ago for this, and that there had to be some effort and some way for them to comply if they needed to, which they probably will through the Endangered Species Act in the future, and to become legal with the state law, and hence the cost share program and a lot of other effort was made in this bill to make it easy for these people to do what they could to correct their problems. Obviously, there is an emergency clause for those that may be in that case, which we felt was well done and carefully considered by this task force. There are many other things that you've heard about in this that we totally agree with and think is necessary. I think its time has come. We have to fix the problems that are out there to comply with ESA and the problems we're facing with our fisheries in the state. And we wholeheartedly support the results of this task force. Just hope that someday in the future we can free up and find the funding necessary to get the job done on the ground. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Test? Are there non-questioning group of staff? Thank you very much.
You wore some of us out last week.
Mr. John O'Shell, is that correct, please? And Ron Yoakum?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ron Yoakum. I'm an attorney for Douglas County. I was a representative of the Association of Oregon Counties on this task force and also on the previous task force. I'd like to start out by indicating the Association of Counties are in agreement with this bill. It's more of a consensus of package. However, we do have a couple of concerns that John's going to talk about in a minute. Just as a quick little bit of history, the fish passage issue kind of nipped Douglas County kind of hard when it first came up. We were in the process of building what's called the Milltown Hill Reservoir Project when the Attorney General's opinion came out and said that the department did not have the authority to waive fish passage. That was a surprise to us because we had three other projects that have been built over the last 20 years or so that had already had waivers of fish passage by the department, only now to find out that they didn't have that authority. As we got into this issue, we found out it wasn't just our water reservoirs and storage projects. It also included all the culverts, bridges, et cetera, that all up and down these streams. And if you've ever been to Douglas County, there's tons, thousands of streams, thousands of culverts, so it's a major issue for us. As we went through this consensus approach, it was a lot of debate. A lot of issues were brought up and discussed. And I really, for one, about the end result. But we do have these one remaining issue. It's really got several subparts that I'm going to let John talk about.
Good afternoon, Chairman Jensen, members of the committee. I'm John O'Shell, County Road Program Manager for the Association of Oregon Counties. I work closely with all the county road officials. I've reviewed the Fish Passage Task Force, excellent piece of work, as stated, and I want to get this in reference. I'm objecting to one detail. Don't want to be sounding like we're not liking what we're seeing here, because we are liking what we're seeing here. And it has to do with funding, as you might expect, but it's on a limited area where the problem is. Understand, we accept that when we're doing a new project, a major rehabilitation, building fish passage should be considered just a matter of doing business, and we're accepting those expenses. We're also very encouraged that the financial support we've received and the way this is heading, that if we have a culvert that's getting close to time to replacement, maybe we can advance it faster.
We would do that probably with our priority anyhow. We've been receiving some financial assistance. Getting those to happen quicker, we agree it's a good idea. The problem comes with the, and I'm going to say culverts, potentially other things. For purpose of the conversation, say culverts, because that's probably what 95-99% of the problems are on county road system. We have a culvert up there, basically nothing is wrong except the fish passage, and for us to go into that, that is basically pulling money away from road maintenance activities. Most of you are aware that we probably don't have enough money to maintain our roads now, so it sort of becomes a fish versus safety issue for us. Things are tight. That will vary from county to county. The specific issue has to do with the amount of funding that is being proposed by the state before they, when they choose to mandate a specific site. Now, let me walk how the priorities work on this. Understand that has been and would expect to be the vast majority of these projects are mutually agreed to by both agencies. They work together. They develop priorities. Frankly, working with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, the state typically pays 75%. The local agency does 25%. Exceptions abound, but that's general practice. What this bill proposes to do is, instead of when you have a mutually agreed upon, if the state decides it's a higher priority than the local, it then proposes that the state would pay less than if it was mutually agreed upon. Basically, they agree at 75%. If the state insists, well, then the state pays less. They only pay 60%. And then if for some reason the state decides it's an emergency, it has to be done now. And once again, this is the state making the declaration of emergency. Then the state decides they don't need to pay any money at all. That seems backwards. My recommendation is if this goes through that, once again, we hope that most of them are going to be the mutually agreed upon, where, you know, some cases the local agency will do them independently. Sometimes we do it with state funding. If the state mandates, I think the number should be about 80%. That's just slightly higher than the mutually agreed upon maximum, meaning, you know, everyone's motivated to do it with the mutually agreed upon 75%. If the state feels they need to force the issue, the state probably ought to pay just a little bit more. If for some reason it's an emergency, which means they need it now, irrespective of the budget, one, it's the state making the declaration, therefore it ought to be them coming up with the money. The other is if you think about most local agency budgets versus the state budget, the state probably can come up with that money a lot easier than the local budget can. So my recommendation, 80% when the state requires, if the state requires it immediately in an emergency, 100%. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 15, Mr. Yelkum and Mr. Oshow, you might look at this language. It seems to say that the funding would be at least 60% and doesn't narrow it to 60-40. Would that address your concern realistically?
I think that number should be 80. In other words, when we look at the standard practice, and I mentioned standard practice with OWEB is 75%. Standard practice on most match money projects that we have are 80 or 90% when we're working with federal government. My sense is if you got the standard practice mutually agreed at 75, if the state is choosing a mandate, the state probably should be paying a slightly higher percentage to maybe encourage them to go with the mutually agreed project instead of the mandated project.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lee, could you repeat the question? I was looking for page 15 and didn't quite catch the
Okay. Oh, maybe I have the... It's in the dash 2 amendment.
I found it now.
Page 15. This question came up in the task force about the 60%, and the discussion was that although the language says 60% or more, there is nothing that narrows it to being a 60-40 split. It could be 65-35 under the federal funds or 90-10 under the department, highway department funds. It just happens that OWEB is a 75-25 match, but this language is meant to deal with many other kinds of cost shares as well.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Lee, your interpretation is correct. 60-40 almost puts a floor on it, rather than saying that's the upper maximum. It puts a floor and says if the state wants to put together this project and say it's a high priority, it's a 60-40 floor, but hopefully the parties will all agree that there is money to, available to make it 75-25 or 90-10, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you're right, that is a floor.
Representative Cruz.
Ron, if this had been in effect 2 years ago, 4 years ago, let's go back to when the county actually had the federal funds available, would we have been able to build Milltown?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cruz, at the time we originally were developing Milltown, we had assurances of federal funds.
Right.
When we got into the, and at that point, about 40% of the project was already dedicated for fish purposes. As we progressed into this and went through consultation with NIMS, we had to put more of the project in for fish purposes, cost us more money. We envisioned that whatever we'd done for NIMS and had already been available in the mitigation package would have been enough for fish, only to have the Fish and Wildlife Commission say no, we had to have further mitigation.
Right.
At which point we also had the Attorney General's opinion says that we couldn't mitigate at all, so the legislation came through and said we could do it. Would this package have helped us? Yes. It would have given us a lot better handle on what was the, the criteria on which we would set the sideboards for when we define net benefit. I think it would have helped us tremendously. It would have been the answer and everything. It wouldn't have given us a free lunch, but it would have at least given us some good sideboards.
So, Mr. I guess good product too late. I put another county on it.
Other questions?
Yes.
Tell me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've heard how many culverts there are in Clackamas County. Do either of you gentlemen happen to remember that?
Mr. Chairman, but there are thousands in Douglas
thousands.
County.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
And if I may follow that up a little bit, Mr. Chairman, one of the concerns we've got is that once you start taking some of these culverts, they were designed for a certain water flow, and you want to upgrade them so they can pass fish, you may be moving into a bridge situation. So we have thousands of culverts. The upgrades are unknown. This can be a very expensive project to do this, and that's why this prioritization system that's proposed in the bill and the fundings, I think, make it work instead of all of a sudden having a mandate that, and everybody's vulnerable to be sued because they don't have these culverts up to speed.
Thank you.
Are there other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair has some questions of legislative counsel, and I see Brendan McCarthy just came in. If you'd come on up, Brendan. Timing is impeccable. I'm confused in 11D, on section page 6, and I'd like to know what it, if you would explain for me, to me, what it means.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, Brendan McCarthy, Deputy Legislative Counsel. Subsection 11B of Section 2 is language that I believe came from, if I'm not mistaken, the Attorney General's office through Representative Lee's office, I believe.
Just on the surface, it seems to me that it eliminates 11A. And that's what I'm, I guess, needing a clarification on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Might I speak to the history just a quick moment? Maybe that'll clear it up a little.
Sure.
Section 11 was an agreement between the governor's office and members of the task force, specifically some utilities with joint state projects on how those might be carried out under the federal law and the state laws of Oregon and Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
So it was compromise language developed between the two parties and agreed to with the rest of the group. However, Section 11B was added to further clarify the language, and the request is now that Section 11B be removed and that a modifying sentence or two be added to 11A to clear that up. And it's my understanding that someone from the AG's office by the name of Burkholder, perhaps, was working with legislative counsel to refine that wording, and that there needs to be one more amendment, which would be a broader 11A that resolves all the problems. And I believe the gentleman is here in the audience from Idaho Power, representing Idaho Power, if there are any very specific questions. But this was a question that came up in our last version of the task force, too, and we've tried to fix it to everybody's satisfaction and are very close to getting there.
Okay. So we're looking at some additional tweaking than needed here at this point.
Right. My understanding is perhaps just one or two sentences would be required to be added to 11A to replace subsection B. Maybe Mr. Sanders may have some information on that as well.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Steve Sanders. I'm with the Department of Justice and have been a technical advisor to the task force. What the committee is focusing on is language which we are trying to, as Representative Lee pointed out, come up with a compromise that addresses bi-state hydroelectric projects, but without jeopardizing the state's authority under Section 401 of the Clean Water Act. Under that federal law, the Department of Environmental Quality has authority to insist on certain conditions on reauthorization of hydroelectric projects. And we did not intend to jeopardize the conditions that DEQ is already legally authorized to add to these projects. Those conditions must be based on a state law, and to the extent that, as part of a mitigation package, the proponent of the project and the Fish and Wildlife Commission agreed, for example, as we have with Mr. Schaub's project at the Coos Bay North Bend Water Board, to bypass flow of a certain amount. We did not want to jeopardize DEQ's authority to call for that same kind of flow in their recommendations, should the requirements for fish passage per se be preempted by the Federal Power Act. So what we were trying to do was identify in Section 11A the possibility that the state's obligation to install fish passage may well be preempted by the Federal Power Act, but that if that were the case, we did not want to create a domino effect by somehow eliminating DEQ's authority to require its own set of conditions, which they get under the Clean Water Act. And as Representative Lee pointed out, while Idaho Power had some objection to the way that 11B was currently worded, we believe that we're pretty close on what the substance is that we're trying to accomplish, and that with some tinkering we'll be able to get the appropriate language.
Okay. Brendan, you have any? We've obviously thrown you a curveball.
Just a,
maybe a screwball.
I'm trying to change from what I was working on in my office. This is not a
knuckleball, Mr. Chair. Knuckleball. Okay.
Finding the transition not so so easy. Back to your question, Mr. Chair. I don't believe that B completely obviates or eliminates A, as Mr. Sanders has explained. I believe this would allow us, the state, to condition certain hydroelectric projects. So there would be an 11A remaining.
Okay. Well, we'll then look forward to the dash three amendments to be forthcoming, I assume, pretty quickly on this.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Actually, Cruz.
Just idle curiosity, if there is, obviously, DEQ has authority under clean water. I'm wondering, in issues of fish passage, what the connectivity between DEQ authority and policy and ODF and W authority and policy is, and if that is addressed anywhere, so we aren't inadvertently setting up double standard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, under a Supreme Court case that analyzed a hydroelectric project out of Washington, the so-called Dosa Wallops case, the Supreme Court decided that water quality factors were more than just how many chemicals were in the water, but affected the purpose for which the water was used, in that case, for fishery purposes. What we are anticipating here is that DEQ may, as a water quality measure, ask for flows that would be similar to, or perhaps mirror flows, agreed to as part of a mitigation package or a waiver of the fish passage. Those conditions, though, those kind of water quality conditions that don't relate directly to pollutants in the water, nevertheless need to be based on a state law basis, and we didn't want to cut off DEQ's current authority to identify water quality conditions that weren't specifically pollution-related.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just follow up. I guess my concern, and I've been one that's been advocating for a long time that compliance with clean water solves a whole lot of ills here, but we do have conflicting authorities here, and I guess what I would not want to see is one agency in trying to comply with their federal regs setting up one standard and having another, you know, for clean water and then ODF&W going off in another direction for ESA compliance. And so I'm just wondering how we make sure that we have these two meshed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, the way we do that for hydroelectric projects is to require the decision on fish passage waiver to be submitted through the FERC, through the HART process. So that once again, this would be again part of the state's unified position on reauthorization to avoid just that duplication or inconsistency.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Thank you. Sorry, Ben.
Thank you.
Is there any other items come for the committee? Yes, please.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to acknowledge Elaine Hallmark at the back of the room, who worked with the task force for almost 2 years to get us to pound out all of the words appropriately. A big job. Elaine, wait. No, Elaine. Back in here. Oh, good.
Hearing no other business coming before the committee today, we'll end the hearing on House Bill 2540 and our adjournment.